Intervju Radija Študent.
Jason Lescalit. V današnjem Eriš intervjuju bomo prisluhnili pogovoru s Jasonom Lescalitom, domačinom ameriške zvezne države Maine, sicer pa prodornim tvorcem elektroakustične glasbe na meji med hrupom, akuzmatiko in sodobno kompozicijo. Jason je Ljubljano v sklopu evropskega dela svoje koncertne turneje obiskal pretekli torek, ko je v sklopu serije dogodkov Sonica Series nastopil v zanimivem novejšem prostoru Mota Point. Z njim smo se dobili prav tam, in sicer v sredo, dan po koncertu.
So yeah, hello Jason, and just want to ask you, how are you? How's Ljubljana?
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah,
it's a good time. I'm having fun in Ljubljana.
I guess we're having fun also with you in Ljubljana, or at least we had fun yesterday when you played a show here in this relatively new space, Mota space.
Yes.
Mota Point. And I wanted to ask you if you're pleased with the performance. I know you set the bar quite high for yourself as far as you giving something extra to the audience, and I know that you also treat live performances differently than recording or studio.
That's true, I do, yes.
Yeah.
So I would say that I was very happy with the concert last night. We had lots of people here. The audience seemed to be very into the music and very appreciative, and that means a lot to me. I always struggle with certain, maybe, you know, problems of the acoustics, or maybe the amplification system. But overall, you know, we work with what we have, and I think it went well.
And how I actually wanted to ask you this, connected to the first question, this space here, it's quite specific, I guess.
It's very reverberant.
Yeah, it's very...
very live.
I had a couple of strange experiences during your performance.
I'm glad.
But do you find it unusual? I mean, and I guess we all find it unusual. But is it actually something you can enjoy?
Yes.
Playing a space like this.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a challenge involved.
Yeah.
And so before the audience arrives, I spend a lot of time playing my sounds in this room and understanding the room. And then I design my performance based around how the room works.
Okay. And how about, well, I know from YouTube videos and all, when you perform probably closer to home in America, in the States, many times you use a whole lot of equipment and so,
yeah.
And I guess when you come here or if you travel further, you can't do that, and you have a smaller setup.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, it's definitely more difficult to travel with the gear.
Yeah.
And it depends on the budget allowed. So if I'm being supported by an organization that can, you know, provide enough funding for the equipment, then we can do this. Without that, then I improvise to try and find new ways to make the same things work. The main instrument that I use is the acoustics of the room. So I can work with very little equipment if needed. I like to bring lots of equipment because I enjoy using analog tape. That's my favorite vehicle for sound. And I mostly appreciate using reel-to-reel tapes. But they're also very heavy and hard to travel with, and they're delicate for traveling. So last night I was using handheld cassette decks.
Yeah.
And inside these handheld machines were small loops. There were loops inside these cassettes.
Huh.
And so it's similar to what I do, you know, but on a smaller scale.
You mean there were actually physically loops,
yeah,
in the cassettes?
That's correct. Uh-huh. Yeah. So these are loop tapes inside the cassette.
The open-ended cassettes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I had a few of those. And on top of that, I was using a turntable with a lock groove record on it, which is loops. And I also used the record player to generate feedback by running the signal high enough to allow the PA system to bring vibration up through the table that I'm working on and through the record player, through the needle, back out through the PA. It creates some feedback, some very interesting feedback. So the loop that's on the record itself is secondary to what I'm trying to achieve by using the record. So the loop on the record ends up being a background for feedback.
Great, that's really some detailed explanation, because I wanted to ask you just about the basics, but you also use the space itself, like you set up a microphone on the window.
That was a very nice thing that I discovered when I got here. The traffic driving by outside would vibrate these glass panes, and the glass panes have holes in them for me to put a microphone in, and it worked really well. That was one of the things that made the room shake. You could feel some really strong vibration in the room.
That was from the outside.
And that was from the outside coming in, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I was actually expecting, but there's also feedback coming through, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
From the woofers.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you've been touring quite some these past few weeks. Mm-hmm. You've done a tour in the U.S., also presenting some newly unveiled video material, mm-hmm. And now this European leg.
That's correct.
May call it.
Yeah, that is a good choice of words.
So how's it been, the tour?
It's been fantastic.
Yeah.
We've been having a good time, good audiences, people are liking the material.
And have you been playing the videos all the time?
Yes, almost every show. I did not show it in Paris or Nantes, uh-huh. but everywhere else.
And you actually had some of the authors of the videos present in the States?
Yes, that's what I've been trying to do. Anybody that participated on the project, I want to do a screening in their hometown. So eventually I will get to all of them.
And how are they involved then in the screening, are they, or?
Sometimes, in April, we'll be doing a screening in New York at the Anthology Film Archive. And because I had three collaborators in New York, it's the one city where I had the most involvement, there'll be all three artists there. And I'll be showing a short film from each of the artists before showing the long form film.
Okay. It'd be nice to attend. But
yeah, it'll be really good.
So the artists you collaborated with on the video materials are mostly musicians, or am I mistaken?
I
don't know.
No, I think mostly they are, but not exclusively.
But they don't do video, per se?
Some
do?
Yeah, and in fact, there's a woman named Heidi who's from Finland, and her main discipline of art is to be a choreographer. Mm-hmm. And a dancer.
So that was the dance video.
Yeah. And she also does video, and she's not a musician. There were some musicians that also do video. There were some musicians that this was their first time doing video. There's a woman named Ellen Francis, who's not a musician at all. She's only video. She also does dancing. She was in the second video. You saw with the veils and the scarves.
Uh-huh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's more in film. She's actually aspiring to be a film director.
Yeah, there's been quite a. You could notice that some videos are more mm-hmm. film oriented, and some are more. How should I say, DIY? Maybe
of course,
some noise edits. Or
yeah.
Something. Of course. As far as the video goes, do you ever perform live? With visuals?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, I did a film festival in Ghent 2 years ago, and I performed music to a live performance to a silent film.
And you enjoyed that?
Oh yeah. It was quite a challenge, actually. It was harder than I imagined it would be to coordinate my music with a live film that I wasn't as intimately familiar with as I wanted to be. You know, I tried watching it several times before the performance, but it was always stressful to try and remember my cues and how to work with it, because it was very specific. I was not as much improvising as composing.
Yeah. We could go on with
that's another conversation.
Yeah, but well, let's go to
the short answer to your question is yes, I do enjoy working with video. I enjoy doing it live as well as post-production. Mm-hmm. I'm open to any kind of use of sound in art. I'm interested in collaborating with any other mixed media, multimedia collaboration at all.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now then, on another note, you've got a record coming out shortly on Kai.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's correct. Yes.
I mean, it's pronounced that way. So this record label is run by your long-term collaborator,
yes.
Graham Lampkin, and you've also quite recently finished the trilogy of done with him.
Yes.
And you've finished it quite with success, I guess, critical praise.
I'm
and
very happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, I'm just hinting at something like, I guess, could you tell us something about your relationship with Graham? Because I guess mm-hmm. it's something quite special, and which is the common thread leading you in such fruitful duos?
First, I want to say that it's very rare to find a relationship like this that can be this successful on a consistently successful over a long period of time like this, and I've only had this happen a few times with Graham Lampkin and also with Greg Kelly and Bahab Rainey Nimprine.
Yeah.
and I don't know how to explain how or why. It just is it's a very naturally occurring process that sometimes takes a lot of work and struggle, but it's kind of like working with family or brothers or something, where even when there's difficulty, it seems like it's part of the natural process, and then the end result is better than it would be with any other collaboration. So I met Graham in somewhere around 2000, sometime in the early 2000s, I don't remember exactly. We played a couple shows on playing on the same bill. He was playing in a group called Tart with Scott Faust and Carla Borecki from, I don't know if you're familiar with their work.
I'm not sure. I'm familiar with some of his group work and some of artists he's collaborated with.
Sure.
I'm not going into names right now.
So they were a group called Tart, and we played on the same concert a couple times, and he and I talked and enjoyed each other's music and suggested that we exchange tapes. He is also a fan of working with tape. And we did this for a while without any success, just trading tapes back and forth, and none of them really became anything. So one day he had invited me to visit his house and to spend a weekend there just for fun. And while there, we made some recordings. And being in person with each other was far more successful than trading tapes through the mail. So from that point on, we always worked together in person.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would sometimes follow up with trading tapes over the internet or through the mail, but it always would start with live action.
And then always tapes, no emailing.
Yeah.
Sound files.
Yeah.
Okay, then I guess on again another note, there's a kind of a sense of even maybe a pop cultural thread going through your work, I think. Whether it be artwork or song title references, mm-hmm. I don't know, stuff like Black Flag or Big Black,
mm-hmm.
of course, even mainstream culture references, playing out huge pop hits, Slow Down, and how far does that go for you, or what does it mean for you? What does this context represent?
I think the easiest answer to that question is that I don't exclude the use of anything. So what I've seen sometimes in art is that artists will have a list of things that are forbidden to be used, and pop culture is usually quite often one of those things. It's maybe because it's too familiar or is distasteful, or they already have seen enough of this already, so they don't want to see more of this. But I open my ears and my eyes to everything. I don't have limitations on what I think is usable. And I feel as long as I can find an interesting way to present a sound, it doesn't matter if it's a field recording where I recorded the sound of traffic in the street or water in a river or a pop song from YouTube. As long as it's presented in a way that's interesting to the listener and relays an artistic message, then that's why I use it.
Okay, now this may be the strangest question I'm gonna ask you.
I doubt it.
Maybe a bit personal even. Now I've read that the title Songs About Nothing is a spin on a kind of, I don't really want to say it, but I don't know how else to, on a kind of purist perception of listening to just sound without meaning attached to it. Now maybe just a short answer to what is your take on the whole dogma of sound in contemporary experimental art world? And I know it's a long shot and a too wide of a question, but still, I'm also interested in knowing what's your perception of music as music, or as sound as music, or music as sound, or sound as non-music. Or,
right.
I mean, you don't really have to.
Well, I want to try and answer your question, so let's try and organize it in a way that I can give you answers that you can use. Because I kind of got lost in halfway through what you're looking for.
Okay.
So you are asking me about pure listening in the beginning?
Something like that, yeah.
Songs About Nothing incorporated the Big Black reference secondarily. It was originally a title that I had already intended to use before I thought about Big Black. Mm-hmm. So Songs About Nothing was a concept that I came up with while talking to my friend Joe Colley, who also had a record called Waste of Songs. And I think that might have been around the time that I was working on my concept, when he was working on that. And the initial idea was that that I work in a field of abstract art. It's an abstract audio art. And other artists in this field often will use very abstract titles in their art, to name their art. And I, as a fan of this kind of music, have found it sometimes difficult to remember the names of different records or different compositions by artists, because they've intentionally created a very vague title or using terms or abbreviations that mean something to them perhaps, but not to the average listener. And so I was interested in the idea of that if I'm creating something, I want my audience or the listener to identify with it in a way that works. And that's why I've always tried to use titles that mean something to me and that I feel an audience member could attach understanding to or meaning to. So Songs About Nothing was an acknowledgement of the fact that my art has no meaning until the listener assigns a meaning to it. Even if I intend a meaning, even if I have a meaning or an intent or a message, that really doesn't truly exist until the audience has decoded it or made an assessment or made their own interpretation of it. So really it's about nothing until you as an audience member give it value. That was the where the title came from. Then the similarities with the big black title and everything gave me more inspiration to run with that idea for using other titles.
Okay. Thanks for trying.
Yeah.
Now you've also got a record label, Glistening Examples, and have some incredibly strong releases, I think.
Thank you.
which I think it was nice you also had them here. Mm-hmm. For the people to buy. I just wanted to mention Grisha Sheckness and the Robert Beatty mm-hmm. Release, which I find both very nice listening.
Thank you.
So could you tell us a bit more about your relationship with these artists? Anything you've got upcoming? I've actually read you've got an Olivia Block release upcoming on Glistening Examples. That's probably quite a big deal.
Yeah, that'll be in the future. It's nowhere near ready for a release yet, but it's something that we've agreed upon. And Olivia is very particular about her work and is very slow with her development in creating the work. And I don't have any intention to rush her along. So it's something we agreed upon last year, but yet it may not happen for maybe another year. So that won't be the next release or anything in the near future, but definitely there will be an Olivia Block record. I think the next Glistening Examples release will either be a duo collaboration of Greg Kelly and me, or another one that's Aaron Dilloway and me. Those are the two that are both very close to being finished, and whichever one I finish first is the one that will happen. But I'm looking at releasing something in the spring from one of those projects.
Okay. What about Robert Beatty, for instance? He also collaborated with you on the videos. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he's a great guy, fantastic artist. I met Robert Beatty a long time ago at something called the No Fun Fest in the US. And I don't remember the year. It was either the first or second No Fun Fest. And he's performing in a group called Hair Police. And I felt like that when I watched Hair Police, I focused on Robert's contribution to that group more than the others. Not to say that the others aren't good, it's just that I noticed him the most. And so we talked, and when I was on tour, Robert helped present my show in his local town of Lexington, Kentucky. And I think that happened twice. I think there were two times I played through there. And in our discussions, the idea just came up. I told him about my label, and he showed me some recordings that he was working on. And that's basically it.
Okay.
Similar story with Grisha. I was on tour, and he had hosted me in Tel Aviv. And through discussion about art and music, I liked his aesthetic. I like that he uses tapes and field recordings, and I think he's a good artist with a good compositional mind. I like his approach to composition, and told him that if he had something he wanted to send me, I'd listen to it and consider using it. And he came up with a really strong record, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's his best work. You know, I'm a fan of his work. He uses the name Mites that he performs under, but I think that the record that he did for Glistening Examples is my favorite of his work. And that's unbiased. That was before I wanted to put it out. Like, I really believed that it was really good.
Okay. And we'll be, I guess, slowly writing down. Maybe I can just ask you one more thing. Keith Rowe will be performing here tonight. And since even your collaborator, Graham, worked with Keith last year on a record.
That's true.
Making A.
Yeah.
I want to know if you have a relationship with Keith Rowe or with with the tradition he's a part of.
Yes, of course. I'm a fan, and I've performed with Keith twice. We played as a duo in Boston and New York, and I think they were successful. I enjoyed the performances. I enjoy his music. Looking forward to his set tonight.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Then I think, I mean, we could go on, but I think we're finished.
As long as I've answered all your questions, that's good.
I mean, I think we're okay. So thank you very much.
Eriš intervju s Jasonom Leskalitom je pripravil Žiga Pucel.
Intervju Radija Študent.